This fall, we're bringing you books about the Northland from the Northland by Northland authors. The Northeastern Minnesota Book Awards, or NEMBA, were established in 1988 to recognize books that substantially represent Northeastern Minnesota in the areas of history, culture, heritage, or lifestyle. Our guest this morning is Anne M. Lewis. Her book, Ship Captain's Daughter, Growing Up on the Great Lakes, published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press, was nominated this year for a 2016 NEMBA Award in the memoir category and received honorable mention. And we have her on the telephone this morning. Good morning, Anne. How are you?
Good morning. I'm just great, thanks.
This memoir, it reaches out to, I think, anybody who loves just being surrounded by the lake. And I wonder that so many of us at this point, unlike maybe 50 years past, or even 30 years past, tend to sort of see the shipping part of Lake Superior's life as being a bit more on the historical side now. Ships still come and go, but not nearly with the frequency from back then. So I've often wondered if people, especially newer transplants to the Great Lakes region, maybe feel a little less connected to the shipping world. And this book really, I think, brings home to me how much it influences citizens around the Great Lakes growing up for the last century or more. And this book is a wonderful memoir. What inspired you to write it?
Well, first of all, I guess as the daughter of a great lake ship captain, it was important to me to preserve local marine history. And as you say, it has changed a lot. And I guess when I started writing, I wasn't quite so aware that it would be history. I was thinking this was our life, but it has changed quite a great deal. And one of the reasons is the big 1,000-footers, my father's ship, which is being reconditioned and is lying in Fraser Shipyard right now as we speak, was almost 700 feet long, and the new ones are 1,000 feet long. So, of course, they need fewer ships to carry just as much cargo. So that has changed a great deal. I think the Great Lakes, the St. Lawrence Seaway changed local shipping. But it was my mission to give a sense not only of the bare shipping facts, but what the life felt like. Mm. So I hope that I've done that. I started when my father told a story about the worst storm he'd ever been in. And he ended up by saying that it was one time on Lake Superior that he thought he was going to die.
Well, how old were you when he told you this story?
Well, he had retired, and I was married and had children, and he just sort of lapsed into this memory. And it was significant because I had never before heard it, and I had never before heard him talk about being afraid.
Hmm.
So I thought it made me think this is a life that's very local and very significant. And I thought, you know, when people go down to the pier and see the great ships come in, I'm not sure if they have a sense about the life of the people who work on them or the families connected. So I thought, you know, I'm going to write about that and see if I can get people into the story of how it feels to see the ship break the horizon line and get bigger and bigger and come into the canal finally when it's your father who's on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fun to try to do that because yeah. I think all of us in Duluth or around the lake are people of the lake. You know, we're connected in one way or another.
Yeah. There are so many ways you could have approached this, a fictional tale that could have maybe given a first-person account of being on a ship or even just, as you say, a factual sort of nonfiction perspective of what shipping life was like. But you actually had a front-row seat because your father, as you say, was a captain. So certainly a memoir is a great way to go. And the stories that you tell are not only about him being on the ship, but just about the life of him coming and going and what life was like when he was away with your mom and things like that. So certainly a way to give, a fuller color picture of what that was like.
Oh, I'm glad you feel that way. It certainly was my mission to do that. There's lots of books about facts of how long ships are and what the cycle of shipping is and so on. But I think it was particularly for people who are people of the lake, to get a sense of what people on that lake, how they are experiencing all the dimensions of that life.
Yeah. So tell us how your father got into shipping in the first place. I mean, he obviously wasn't born a captain, so he had to somehow work his way into the trade.
Oh, I love that question because I think it has to do with, I like to think, a little bit of a poetic piece. I think there's a lure to the water, and that there is and was to local boys. He talked about watching the big ships come in and being sort of romanced by them. And so at 16, as many local boys did, and actually in my life also did go out to make some extra money, you know, in the summer. That's how he started. He and in his era, I think people, at young boys at 16, sometimes did, you know, start their careers. So he talks actually in his retirement article about being captured by the big ships and the lake, and he said that he just almost immediately thought, this is what I want to do. And I'm sure for a young man, you know, there was a sense of adventure, of course, but I think it's a regional kind of thing. You know, some people work on land, on the docks, whatever, and some people go to sea, and he was one of those young men. So that was the beginning of his dream. And in terms of writing, you know, at first I thought, well, I'm going to write about my dad, and I thought, you know, really the most authentic thing I can do is write about my experience of the life, and not try to speak for him, but how my mother and I experienced it.
Right. Well, and certainly, as you say, that he told you some stories as well, so that way you can bring in all the different angles of the same story.
Yes, I hoped to do that. I think it's, you know, it's difficult to know what other people's lives are like, and this is one unique to our area. So I tried to give a little glimpse of what it's like to eat in the officer's dining room, and that actually turns out to be rather historic as well. I don't think they use ship's china anymore. Every fleet had its own china. My dad worked for Interlake Steamship Company or Pickens Mather, and they had their flag on the cups, and it was red, white, and blue, and I don't think they use much of that anymore. You know, times have changed.
Yeah. Your father, Willis Mitchler, now, you mentioned that one of the ships that he captained, not one of the 1,000-footers, but one of the shorter ones, a 700-footer, what was the name of the ship again? And it's being retrofitted, which is exciting, because as you say, the smaller ships aren't really in play.
It is. It's the Herbert C. Jackson, and it's just been in the news when it first came in last December. It's been at Fraser Shipyard until now, and I get to see it this Saturday. The Captain Paul Berger has so generously offered to give me a tour.
Oh, nice.
And I think that'll be really certainly memorable. It was the ship on which I took my last trip with my father, and it was his favorite. He called it a humdinger of a ship. So, and it's, you know, moored only a mile from where he grew up. So I think, oh, there's something significant about that. Wouldn't he have loved at 16 to think that that ship was his? And now I have to be very careful to say, now it's Captain Berger's ship. But, of course, in my mind.
I imagine there's a certain honor among captains that even after they give up the helm, they still like to share that ownership in its history.
Yes, so. They bond with their ships. Mm-hmm. They think they're all different, and they learn how to work with each other.
It's a classic-looking ship. I've just called up a photo of it online, and 1,000-footers now are all piloted from the back, and this has the cabin up front, or this the bridge, I should say, up front.
Yeah.
So it's one of those sort of classic-looking ships, and they're retrofitting it. It's a shorter ship, and they're not as common anymore. What was the choice, do you think, for them to retrofit this ship?
Well, the big ships now have trouble getting into the smaller ports. So the decision was to keep this ship to be able to do that, to get into places like Escanaba, and, you know, it's kind of like when you get what you want what you get, in a way. I mean, the big ships are marvelous for taking, you know, huge amounts of tonnage, but, you know, the ports were designed for ships of the past,
yeah.
And you know, some of the docks and so on, I think, are shorter. So now this ship has its own mission, which is, and I agree with you, it is very handsome amongst ships. And to have that forward cabin, I actually can't even imagine a ship without a forward and after cabin, because there was such a ship culture that went with that. You know, the navigators were in the front and the engineers were in the back. They were both essential to make it work, but they were actually kind of different personalities in my experience. And it was a great drama. You know, the galleys in the back, that's where the eating occurs. So the front end people had the ritual of walking back to the after end. And there's all sorts of things that went with those two cabins. So I, it's a whole new experience, I would think. So that was my world, yeah. the front end. And the captain had the whole middle deck, which was quite significant in my day. When you became a captain, that was a marvelous sort of advance.
Oh, larger quarters, fancier
yes.
digs. Okay.
You have an office and a bedroom and a living room, so to speak. They called it the observation room because it had portholes so you could see straight ahead, of course, but anyway, it lended a bit of drama.
That sounds like it would be a fun ethnography to do, as you talk about the sort of the two sort of coexisting cultures on a ship, and that city block long distance between them that they had to.
Yes, I think that would be fascinating. Hmm. I think it would be interesting, and also to get the pilot house. Also, was just it was like the ship's family room to me. Hmm. That's where you'd have at least four men at a time. Wheelsman, mate, watchman would drop by, and it would be fun to record some of the stories because, of course, you have four-hour watches and lots to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that still happens to some extent.
Wonderful. The book includes so many photographs, and I think a mm-hmm. memoir helps you certainly get those photographs in the book because you experienced so many different times of connecting with your dad and the ships over the years. So it's great to see the history as well as read about it. So.
Oh, thank you. I think they are too. I think it's like the National Geographic. You can just page through for the pictures and get the hang of it.
So light reading before you get into the heavier reading. Later
right.
On, so. Well,
the overview.
Thanks so much. This is a great story. We appreciate your time this morning.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been delightful.
Take care.
Bye.
Anne M. Lewis, who is the author of Ship Captain's Daughter, Growing Up on the Great Lakes, published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. This fall, we'll be bringing you books about the Northland, from the Northland, and by NEMBA Award-winning authors and nominees. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.